This is Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog and member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network.
Better off the mark.
Right yes. Foot finds Twine by Tamakis. Oh, what a beautiful setup. It's all Tamakis on the payoff. 1-0 Oakland.
All right, welcome in. This is Aaron here with John and Peter again. And fellas, three matches have been played since the last time we did this. And look, I don't want to talk about it. You don't want to talk about it. But we have decided that this is what we're going to spend at least one night of our week doing. So here we go. 2 weekends ago, Oakland hosts San Antonio FC. And we're thinking to ourselves, this is it, just exceedingly unlikely that Oakland gets a result out of this. And then, holy Moses, Johnny Rodriguez with a Super Saiyan twisting, like just a really incredible feat of athleticism to get that goal off the volley in the 9th minute. And then Anwar Pelaez off the kickoff, nicks it off the back line and takes it all the way to the house himself. It's 2-0 Oakland, and the rest of the week would just go downhill after that, essentially. That was the high point. Oakland, as I think you might expect them to do so against a team that is at or near the top of the table, they just sort of started packing it in. They put a low block out there and said to San Antonio, you're going to have to break us down. And they almost got away with it. Santiago Patino gets one in the 55th minute, and then it wasn't until the 5th minute of second half stoppage time that San Antonio found the equalizer. Really frustrating goal for a lot of reasons. Obviously, the timing of it was heartbreaking, but also it was something that could have been dealt with. It was a long ball into the box. There were two headers. Like, at some point, you got to get up there and interfere with what's going on. San Antonio played really well in the second half of that game. It's hard to take anything away from them, but that does feel like a missed opportunity for Oakland. And given the remaining results since our last episode, those 2 points might loom very, very large. Talk to us at any other point in the season. We're saying 1 point against San Antonio. All right. All right. You know, we played one of the better teams in the league pretty even. But in context, maybe 1 point was not enough. Midweek, Oakland goes to Orange County, down to beautiful, sunny, driveway-heavy Irvine, California. Anwar Pelaez gets Oakland off the mark first in the 11th minute with a pretty nice goal, nicely worked goal off of a set piece. I guess it was sort of off a set piece. The ball is ball goes through the box off the set piece. It gets worked back around. Memo keeps it in possession very nicely with a diving effort to keep it away from Orange County. Napo puts it back into the box. Hackshaw heads it centrally, and Pelaez puts it away. Excellent start to the game. Exactly what you need. And that was pretty much it. Orange County draws a penalty in the 2nd minute of first half stoppage time that was, soft. I mean, it really was soft. I think it's probably a penalty, but is also you could have gotten away with not calling that there. There was, I forget which Orange County player it was. He definitely made the most out of whatever contact there had been. I think Mefeka surrendered it, and you could see on the replay, he's just sort of smiling like, you know, I know you had to do that, but that's not a penalty. That's just not a penalty, but it gets put home. And then 3 minutes later, Thomas Amang, I think that was off a corner kick, and one that, again, the Roots probably should have dealt with. Paul goes flailing out into the box to punch the ball away and just misses. There's no one on the line. And Orange County, after being behind for most of the first half, over half an hour, takes a 2-1 lead into the locker room. And then Oakland just shoots themselves in the foot, beginning a second half. 50th minute, Brian Olosky scores after Emra. I'm not even sure what he's looking at. He passed it from the back line right to an Orange County player unmarked in the middle of the field. And the race was on. Roots scramble job did a good job of getting it away from, I think it was Amang who brought the ball down to the 18-yard box. But second runner, Brian Olosky, picked up the pieces and put it past Paul, who I think was probably screened because he didn't even react to the shot. So there's another missed opportunity. 3-1 Orange County there. So we come, we finish off this set of matches. Oakland, having put themselves in a very terrible spot, has to go down to San Diego for San Diego Loyal's last regular season home match ever, in the unenviable position of needing a result in that very emotionally charged atmosphere. And hey, wouldn't you know it, off the top, Oakland gets a goal. Brian Tomakis, 13th minute, assisted by Danny Barbier. Beautiful goal. And again, that was pretty much it. 4 minutes later, Joe Corona puts one past Paul. 2 minutes after that, Ronaldo Damas. And this one, if I'm remembering this one correctly, I think this one began with a pass that Tomakis just misplayed completely, and allowed Orange County to get in behind. And no one marked Ronaldo Damas, like one of the best strikers in the league for 3 years running. Just no one thought that was important. Damas got one 6 minutes later, the 25th minute. He picked up his brace. This time, I think the onus might be on Memo Diaz, who was in position to mark Damas's run and just sort of didn't do it. And so Damas gets into the middle of the box, and I might have those goals backwards. It's all a blur. I'm trying to wipe it from my mind. But the wingbacks, I am sure, were most immediately responsible for the disaster at the back. And then Adrian Perez in the 44th minute, as if to really rub salt in the wound, just a rocket from outside the box. Again, he carried the ball quite a ways. No one picked him up. And it's then you get 4-1 going into halftime. The Roots got one back in the 82nd minute, which doesn't even feel like a consolation prize. 4-2, and Oakland is now 1-2-7 in their last 10 games. That is 5 points from 30. If we were a real soccer country, we'd be calling that relegation form. Instead, what we're doing is we're sitting here and thinking, well, the season's not quite over yet, which is a real nice thing that the USL has done for us here. But it looks pretty bleak right now. The Roots have gone from a commanding position in the table where you could convince yourself that even better things were on the horizon to just about the most precarious position on the table, in terms of the playoffs. So there you have it. We'll try not to revel in it too much or wallow in it too much, I guess. John, let me begin with you. I think what is maybe most shocking to me is you look at this run that the Roots have had, the last 10 matches. Like I said, the results are terrible, but the beginning of this, the performances were not, right? I mean, a one goal loss to Switchbacks, that was disappointing, but look, fine margins, whatever. You go away, you win at New Mexico United, a win that looks pretty good right now. And then a one goal loss away to Louisville City, one goal loss to Sacramento, and with a pretty good performance that maybe deserved more than that, than to take 0 points from that. The wheels have come completely off. The last couple of performances, there's just so little that's redeeming about them. I can't remember the last time. Well, I shouldn't say that. But
the first 15 minutes of San Antonio. You're going to say the last time the Roots looked good.
No. No, what I was going to say is that the Roots had no control over any part of the pitch in San Antonio. Editor's note, he means San Diego. Just like no control over any part of the pitch. And that's something you see, you know, when the continental giants, you know, like your Bayern Munichs, your Real Madrids, you know, play teams at the bottom of the table in those leagues. You might see something like that. You don't see it with two mid-table teams. Like what we saw, I'm having a hard time even fathoming this. So I don't know. Can you put this into context? Can you talk me out of this spiral here? You got anything for me?
It is hard to put it in context. And you know, we're going to call this episode the therapy session, because I think we're all just going to be talking about.
Yeah. Just get it all out there.
Get it all out, because there's no making sense of it. None of us are former soccer professionals or analysts or things like that, so we're really just going off vibes. But I mean, it's 5 of the matches of the 8-game winless streak Roots held a winning position in, and they just have given it away. And it's kind of a testament to the mentality. Just, I don't know. It's like every time the team goes up, it's hard to say if they, if there's a mentality shift or anything, but the results are what they are. I think one thing that is interesting too is sort of just how there has been an inability to really define what the focus is, what the what's the word I'm looking for? You know, the focus of the team, the identity of the team is what I'm looking for. You know, in the beginning of the season, I went back, listened to Noah's Media Day interview. That's how bad this has gotten. I'm going all the way back to look for clues. I'm like, okay, we were promised a home playoff game. Where did this go wrong? So I go back. I went back and listened to it. Noah was saying, you know, we still want to be a possessive team, but still a team that's good on defense and in transition. And then for a while, it did seem like they were tackling all those bases. But as this season has gone on, it's really just gone out the window because there is no identity anymore. There is nothing that we can say this team is doing really well. And it's like they're caught in between two minds there. You know, are we a good defensive team? Are we a good team in transition? Do we like to hold the ball?
Let me answer one of those questions for you. This is not a good defensive team.
Yeah.
I mean, at least For a while it really was. They were at least they were good at goal prevention. You know, I think we mentioned a few times that the reliance on incredible saves by Paul Blanchett was maybe something we needed to work on, but they're surrendering 2.2 goals a match in their last 10, which is atrocious, right? Like, I mean, if you look at if you just take a look at the table and see, hey, does anyone even come close to that? The answer is Hartford Athletic, who has surrendered 74 and 33. I mean, that is the only team with a defensive record, you know, over the course of the season that looks anything like what we're seeing in the last 10 matches. And it's just baffling given how unlike them this was. And let me put it to you, Peter. One of the things that goes along with this, I think that, you know, the goal return in the last 10 matches actually is not out of whack for what Roots have been doing all season, which I contend was insufficient the whole time, but it is sufficient to get you into the playoffs. It's on the lower end of acceptable. You know, I think there's only three examples, or there's going to be three examples of teams with a worse per game goal return than the Roots are going to have, who have made the playoffs in the last 3 years, one of which happens to be the Roots themselves from a couple of years ago. But it's acceptable if your defense is okay. But despite the fact that the goals haven't totally dried up, I don't know that I would call this team threatening. And one of the ways they seem to have compensated for that, and you see this in especially the last two matches, that the defenders are just taking the burden for everything on the field, and they're getting totally hung out to dry by the midfield. I mean, what are our midfielders doing right now? I couldn't tell you, honestly.
No, the midfield's not working. And that's, you know, that's what I was going to say as like the fundamental problem with this team. And there's some talented guys there, but, you know, the Matsoso-Donaciano pairing doesn't seem to work right. And things were better with Gomez, although even with Gomez back, you know, it's not right. You know, I don't know if Donaciano is just not as, you know, never fully got right after that long layoff or what it is. But no, they just get run over. And they get run over. They don't create a ton in attack. And then when they get run over, sure, we're playing three center backs, but those three center backs are wrong footed and don't have the speed to make up ground, and the fullbacks are in the attack, you know, so it doesn't matter.
This is the thing that is baffling to me, I think, at this point, is that they're getting overrun. We're outnumbered in midfield nearly every game, and at no point has the solution been put another midfielder on the pitch.
Yeah. I just looked this up, and in part, I think this says something. Well, we can talk about what this means after I say it. Plus minus goal differential for the Roots. There are very few players who are positive. The most positive player with a plus seven goal differential is Eduardo Rito. And I stand by my points about why trading him was okay, but that number doesn't lie. Although it might take into account the 4-1 win at Birmingham, which was a fluke. And we all know that was a fluke. But right behind him,
it looked good back then.
No, I mean, they did, but I mean, they piled it on after that red card, right?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
At plus six is Joseph Nane, and at plus four is Neville Hackshaw. And as much as we weren't sure about Nane's longevity, that, you know, the most compelling thing I've seen, I think it was from Super Ensalada, pointed out that since Nane's gone out, we look like shit. The only reason it's not obvious is because we won the next two games.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it is his prolonged absence. And I think that there's a, even though he was playing as a center back, he brings a calmness and a maturity, and he's one of our best technical players, even if he doesn't accomplish it by dribbling past you anymore. But he is still by far one of our best technical players. And his pedigree sort of shows that. So anyway, that's the positive end. The negative end, you know, the worst player on the team by goal differential at minus eight is Donaciano. At minus six is Pelaez, and minus five tied are Matsoso and Cedeño.
Woof.
And that's...
I mean, Cedeño missed our purple patch at the beginning of the season, so...
He did, and I don't think he can really wear that, although... Yeah.
Although he has disappeared in the last few matches. This is the other thing that is just totally baffling to me. And I think Jack on the blog sort of made this point that in order to get Pelaez and Rodriguez on the field at the same time, we seem to be putting Mefeca and Cedeño in suboptimal positions. The thinking being that this is a sacrifice worth making just because we need people who can score, and the two best goal scorers on the team are Rodriguez and Pelaez. But I mean, we've lost control over so many parts of the pitch. I don't know if that's actually true. To your point about Nane, and I think this is, I'm of two minds here, and they're totally unrelated. Sorry, that one, a Roots dog is having a dream right now. But one is that this total drop-off in form, I'll agree that we haven't looked great for the last 10 matches. I still think there's an argument to be made that 5 points out of 30 is a little unfair given what the performances looked like at the beginning of that stretch, and that it just seems to me a little too simple to say that Nane's absence explains all of this, given that the performances have clearly taken four or five steps down in the last couple of weeks. And he's been out much longer than that. But I do take your point. It does feel like the flexibility they had to move people around in the field really dropped off when he got injured.
I think, you know, Nane's injury, it was sort of a catalyst for all this, because you see the impact that Hackshaw had in the midfield. I mean, and that, I think, in itself, you know, Nane going to center back, Hackshaw going to midfield, Murad going to midfield, even Formella starting a game at striker. I think these are all examples of the roster building process gone wrong. I mean, because you don't... I think Hackshaw was signed with the idea of being a center back. And then somewhere along the line, you know, Noah said, oh, you know, I'd rather have Nane back there, and he's more reliable there, and I like Hackshaw for what he brings in the midfield. So, I mean, these are all, I mean, the list goes on with swings and misses. Pelaez, Kevin Wright, Wolfgang didn't work out that heavily. I mean, he's a backup. Nye, you get with Nye was gotten in mind with, you know, Tamakis right now being on international duty and also planning towards the future. But there was also just a lot of, you know, Napo, Koze, all these moves, big moves that were supposed to, you know, become mainline starters just didn't pan out. So, you know, in my talking points, I go back to when we're in third place and, you know, I'm hounding you guys, hounding Peter for an answer over whether Roots are overperforming or overachieving. And, you know, now we get here and, you know, what's the answer, guys? I mean,
bit of a slap in the face, this reality thing.
I think we knew
they were overperforming, right? Sorry, Peter, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
There's a lot of variance. You know, you have your sort of base level of talent that would dictate a certain level of performance, and there's a lot of variance up and down, especially in a 34-game season, right? The current run is so far below what the Roots showed they were capable of at the beginning of the season that it's almost unfathomable. I guess you would say normally, right, without a major injury or something, or a trade, something along those lines. And I guess Nane qualifies. Maybe it's the cumulative effect of, you know, over the whole season of having lost, you lose the voice of Nane, and, you know, when things start going wrong, there's no one on the pitch to really pick everyone back up and make sure that no one loses the plot. You lose the speed of Rito, which means that as teams start figuring out what you're doing, you don't have an out. You know, there's not a play. There's not something you can pull out of your back pocket and just sort of say, we got this. You know, we're going to be able to make something happen with this. But it's just stunning to see this, the current level of performance compared to where they were. It's hard to believe it's the same team.
I mean, I agree. Your point is well taken that when you asked if the Roots were overperforming, you were right. And as much as we may have waffled on that, you know, you were right. I think the Roots may right now be underperforming more than they were overperforming them. You know, and that's, I don't want to be harsh on an individual or the manager. You know, I'm sure a lot of guys would take a lot of blame for what's going on right now. But like, there's just a, you know, only one guy has to make a mistake in any given game to blow the game. And if that happens in seven games in a row, like, I'm not saying you're not playing badly, but it doesn't take a lot to be sort of underperforming like that. And here's the thing. This team would be almost safe right now into the playoff spot with three more points, right? And they lost to Las Vegas. And they're obviously better than Vegas. On their worst day, the Roots are better than Vegas. They still lost a game to them, obviously. But, like, it just shows me that it's, like, it's underperforming. I wonder if the issue with losing Nane, bringing us back to that Hartford game, is it makes the Roots an easy scout. The answer is pressure the hell out of their midfield, and there will be a breakdown at some point.
Or many points.
Or many points, but at least some points.
Right. I think the pessimistic response to your point about it just takes one breakdown for everything to go wrong is that the Roots have been playing with so little margin for error in the last few games. And not only are they using up that entire margin for error, but they're using up a lot more than that, especially recently. But you're right. At the same time, they started off so well, they would have been safe if they'd won some of the games that you really think they should have won. Away to Las Vegas Lights. I mean, if they'd gotten the 3 points against Monterey Bay instead of the one, that's a big deal.
With better refereeing in the with better refereeing in the Phoenix games. I do feel like I complained much of the season about the fact that the Roots were completely toothless on set pieces. And that finger on the monkey's paw curled up with the Roots getting three set piece goals in the last five games. And well, I mean, they got a point out of them.
You know, we should acknowledge we have been asking for better play on set pieces. We've been asking for a little more aggression with the ball recently. And I mean, they've gotten the set piece goals. They were letting it fly against San Diego, excuse me. I think we should acknowledge that those things were happening, which is good. But if you can't control the midfield, like, good luck. You know, it's nearly impossible. If you can't even hold your own in the midfield, it's going to be nearly impossible to play another team even, which I think is exactly what we've seen in the last three matches. The only way they were able to play San Antonio to a draw was two spectacular goals on great individual effort, and that's not sustainable.
My last little bit of bad news to just sort of twist the knife in here is that this game this past Saturday is the only time the Roots have ever conceded four goals in the USL.
Well,
you know, let's go back to the midfield here. I mean, this hurts to bring up again, but it's sort of a testament to how you miss Jose Hernandez in that role. I mean, how many times was the game in the final moments or late in the game we needed to move the ball upfield? I mean, the ball went to him, he would turn it, and he would push it up, kick it left to right. I mean, it feels like they just don't have that. You know, it's you get rid of your top midfielder. You bring in Napo, a veteran, to fill that role, and it just, you know, he was already on the outs in Louisville. I mean, we got to call it what it is, and that was a miss.
It's not just your top midfielder either, right? They sold Charlie Dennis's contract to Tampa Bay Rowdies. This midfield worked last year because you had two playmakers sitting in there, and this replaced them with zero playmakers.
This team would be so much better with Charlie Dennis.
It's just much better.
Shockingly better with an eight who completes 80% of his passes or whatever.
How much I miss that man.
Well, the incredible thing about the Oakland Roots spot right now is that if they win their last game, which happens to be at home, they will qualify for the playoffs.
Is being at home a good thing right now?
That's a great question. I don't know that it is a good thing, but you want to be in a position where you control your own destiny. And somehow, after everything, the Oakland Roots still control their own destiny. Let's see, we've played El Paso once before. It was a 3-1 win away. Joseph Nane was the captain. So obviously changes will be made from that lineup. But El Paso currently sits a little bit above us in the table, but not so far above us that a win won't take us above them. They're in a very, very up and down little stretch here. They are 3-3-3 in their last nine matches. Now that comes off the heels of a dreadful stretch, really bad. Three draws and seven losses in 10. So pretty much anything's better than that. They're not blowing people away right now. In this stretch, the wins are over Hartford. Okay. Las Vegas. I mean, obviously they're a powerhouse, but you expect a team like El Paso to beat Las Vegas. And Charleston at home. Charleston's not bad, but Charleston flew to El Paso on what I assume was a Breeze Airways flight, probably wasn't very comfortable, not great to just hop off that plane and play. So that's nice. Their draws, Orange County, okay, that's pretty good. Phoenix Rising, obviously, and San Diego Loyal. And then the losses, home against Monterey Bay. That's okay. Away against Sacramento, obviously. And then most recently, a 4-0 loss on the road against Memphis 901 FC. So they are all over the place right now. Not much you can take out of it. They had a stretch earlier this season of seven consecutive wins. And that actually still accounts for nearly half of the points they've earned on the season. So it's a tale of three different seasons for this team, basically. I guess they had a rough start to the season. They lost their first three, but then they got scorching hot, went ice cold, and are now somewhere in the middle. Hard to know what to make of this team. They play well on the road, right? 7-4-5 on the road. That is actually, that's very good. It is better than Oakland's home form, which is pretty wild. So, I mean, who knows? Again, this game is for all the marbles. One thing that Oakland may have going for it is that El Paso is fine with the draw. You know, just I think maybe in the back of your mind, if you know you're fine with the draw, maybe you're not attacking this game with the same kind of ferocity that Oakland is going to have to, knows they're going to have to attack this game with. If Oakland gets a draw, all hope is not lost. They do win most of the tiebreakers, but they will need some help. So let's just forget about that as a possibility.
The question I have for you guys just is back to the midfield. You know, it's another game. It's another critical game. We have Tomakis Hackshaw out on national duty. So who is your midfield? That has been the talking point really out of this episode here. Where do you guys play there? Who do you want to see there?
Well, first of all, thank you for that horrible reminder that two of the more important players in the team will be on international duty. It's a really good question, John. I advocate's a strong word. I don't think anything that I do on the blog is advocating, but I threw out a possible 4-4-2 diamond a couple of match previews ago. And, you know, I understand if you might have given up on the match previews as we have devolved into madness thinking about this team and about places like Irvine, California. It's not fun for Peter. So, you know, I get it.
I just to jump in real quick. Some Orange County fan jumped into my mentions on Twitter to talk shit after the Orange County game. And it's like, I just don't really have a response for two reasons. One of which is that result hurts more than anything you could say. And second, like, I get to go to restaurants that aren't in strip malls.
Oh, shit. Yeah. But to your question, John, I think I've said this many times. I wouldn't play the 3-4-3. It isn't working right now. Do something different. Hackshaw is pretty important to what I was thinking about there with that midfield diamond. But I think there's got to be more bodies in midfield, and it's got to be more intentional. You know, I think if you bring Mefeka central and let him play kind of as a 10, false 9-ish type position. In this game, you're going to have Diaz and Bobakar Nye on the in the fullback positions or the wingbacks, as it will be, but fullbacks as I wish it were. So you're probably going to have like a Cedeño and maybe a Gomez on the sides of the diamond, and get your guess is as good as mine at the base of the diamond. Maybe it's Murad, given who's available, but I honestly, with the ease with which the midfield is getting run past the last two, it just put more bodies there. Slow the ball down. That is, I would think, be thing one.
So you're not going Pelai's third straight game?
No, actually, I think you would be. You would be. This would set you up to have Johnny and Pelai's up top in sort of a striker, second striker type setup, rather than trying to shoehorn them into the front three that we've seen.
Peter.
Yeah, I mean, I think we probably run out the same lineup as last time, which is Gomez and Donaciano. And I think that's what I pick in midfield. I mean, I don't think there's going to be a change in formation. And I think that, I don't know. I think it's going to be those two. And I think that what we have to hope for is that they're more self-assured. I think that this is, you know, this isn't exactly to your question, but El Paso's last game, they got blown out by Memphis. They did not record a shot on goal against Memphis. Their lead striker is Lucho Solignac, who has been out since August. He has 9 of their goals. They otherwise don't have a player over 6. They're running 2 strikers right now, one of whom is a 24-year-old who is Faroese. What's the denonym for the Faroe Islands?
You got it right.
Faroese?
Faroese.
And I just don't think that they don't offer much threat, which doesn't mean that the Roots can't conspire to concede 3 to 7
goals incoming.
I like how you have a quick little mental breakdown in the middle of that sentence there.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not good. None of this is good. All of this is shit.
Well, maybe we should just do whatever Memphis did. I didn't watch the game, but certainly someone has.
The first goal was scored by Akeem Ward. So basically, El Paso is there for the taking by Roots players. I don't know. I mean, they just need to focus. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that we like what we've seen about this team under pressure this season. And this is the pressure. The lid is shaking on the top of the pot because the pressure is so high right now. But I don't think that El Paso have been good since Soliniak got hurt. And I think that they've just managed to scrape some good results.
How about your front three? Do you go Plaz, Johnny, Cedeño, Lindo, Johnny? Yeah, go on.
I might go back to Johnny, Lindo, and Cedeño. Failing that, I think I might bench Cedeño and play Lindo, Johnny, and Pelaez as the front three. I may change my mind about that when I watch the El Paso's Memphis highlights. You know what's funny is that their last good result was a 3-2 win over Charleston Battery, and Augie Williams missed a penalty kick in that game to prevent it from being 3-3. So, you know, even their best recent result is like, you know, the ball didn't go in the net, but you did everything you could to let it.
Well, that's nice. We have hope. I think that if you're going to go with a front three, I think it behooves this team to have one of Johnny or Pelaez available to come off the bench. The problem in so many of these games has been that the Roots are chasing and there isn't an attacking substitution that can be made. And there's enough, we've seen it, there's enough in a front line of Mefeca, Cedeño, Rodriguez to score 1 or 2 goals. So I think I would let them try, honestly. If we're going to have a front three, I would let them try to do that. And so that way you have someone who can come off the... And we're not relying on Luis Saldana as our attacking substitution. I mean, the kid looks the part, but you want someone with a little bit more experience to be coming on there, right? You know, it's fun. It's really fun when the academy products play for the team, but when the chips are down, you don't want a guy who got signed off the 510 squad halfway through the season to be the guy you have to count on. If you can count on him, that's great, but I don't think that's the position you want to be in. But that's my 2 cents on that. It's going to be interesting. I think probably pull my hair out when I see the lineup, you know, get posted and it's exactly the same as it's been. Just some, well, accounting for the fact that we have 2 important players on international duty. Something's got to change. I just don't think they can do the same thing they did the last couple of games. It's looked bad. But that's also not down to the formation. I mean, not tracking runners, not playing long balls. These are mistakes you shouldn't be making regardless. And
several of the recent like mental errors have been Hackshaw. And Hackshaw brings a lot in attack. And I think overall he is probably... I think he's definitely our second best center back right now in this season, over the course of the season. But, you know, honestly, it might be, this may be a game to bench Hackshaw anyway, or at least bring him in off the bench late to get his head right. So let, you know, maybe it's okay that he's away on international duty. I wish that I believed more in the Murad Clementa duopoly. It is just not what it was in prior seasons. Anyway, I don't think it's the end of the world that we're missing it. And thank God we have Babacar Nai now, because yeah, that makes missing Tomakis survivable.
All right. Well, I'm not going to ask you for predictions. We all know how this game is going to go.
Can I throw a prediction? I thought.
Oh, yeah, you can. I mean, you can offer one.
This is.
I'll accept them. I just wasn't going to ask you for them.
I'm stealing this from Steve, our hooligan captain, and I thought it was good. So what? Roots lost 4-2. El Paso lost 4-0. Roots 2-0. That's all.
They're good enough to win this match. That's they're good enough to have been much better than they have been too. So if they could go ahead and be much better than they have been and also win the match, I'd be exceedingly happy with that. I would prefer.
The rootsiest outcome here is a draw where the Roots still make the playoffs. I mean, that is like, that's just what the last two seasons have been like. I don't know. I think they win. I think we have to face down the away match to Sacramento in the first round of the playoffs.
Well, if they win, isn't there every chance that they are in seventh place?
Interesting.
In which case, we'd be facing down an away match against San Antonio.
But we know we can beat San Antonio.
Yeah. There's also a decent chance that second place is Orange County or San Diego.
Can't beat those teams.
Juggernauts. Let's see here. Oakland, El Paso. San Antonio is Indy 11. So, I mean, they win and they've got it, right? Orange County is on the road against Monterey Bay. San Diego Loyal is on the road against Las Vegas Lights. I mean, I don't know. When you're Lights are currently 24 points out of the last playoff spot on 19 through this part of the season. So they might not have a whole lot to play for. Monterey could be spicy, though, because I think they're looking at this thinking if they win and New Mexico and Oakland lose, they're in the playoffs. So Orange County might have a little bit of a tough time with it. New Mexico, by the way, New Mexico, Friday the 13th match, home against Memphis 901. So that's pretty spicy. And Memphis is, they're probably going to want to win to stay ahead of Louisville City for the last home playoff spot in the East.
San Diego is going to score more goals, but Andrew Carlton is going to ask Mike Pence to step in and rule that the goals weren't legitimate.
Rule them out. Okay, so this is it. Oakland, El Paso for one or two of the marbles for a chance to play for a few more marbles after that. Those are the stakes.
There's marbles on the table.
Marbles are around in the vicinity, and the goal is to have some of them by the time the weekend is over. Win, and they are in. This is not the position we thought we'd be in, but it is not the worst position. And one last chance to see the team at Pioneer Stadium for this season to enjoy that beautiful view of the East Bay from the parking lot. I mean, that's almost worth the trip by itself, honestly. We'll see you out there ready to scream our lungs out and hopefully will this team to a victory into the playoffs. And until then, up the Roots.